Do 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 do. Are we making a podcast? We are making a podcast. I'm Adam Rapport, and this is the Bon Appetit Foodcast. Up first this week, we have food director Carla Lolly Music talking to senior associate food editor Molly Boz about salad. And you might be like, salad? Really? That's it? Well, maybe you're like us at BA and you go out to dinner and you notice that actually the most interesting, exciting, delicious things on the menu are salads these days. So we wondered what were chefs doing to make these creations so multi-layered and interesting and surprising. Turns out a lot. Carla and Molly go deep on the rules, ideas, and recipes that will up your salad making game to the level of the pros. And then after that, I chat with senior food editor Andy Baragani about herbs, because I think I call him the doctor of herbs or Dr. Herbs, and he corrected me that he's the prince of herbs, but the guy knows his herbs, is always cooking with them, always minting, chopping, and tearing. So he gives us some tips for buying herbs, how to wash and store them, and what you should be doing with them, because you're probably not doing enough. Oh, and finally, one more thing. If you want to go check out another great Condé Nast podcast, go give a listen to Corporate Lunch by the guys over at GQ and GQ Style. I was on this week talking about iced coffee and double-breasted suit jackets and sort of everything in between. That is Corporate Lunch by GQ Style. All right, now let's go to the show.
Molly.
Yes, Carla.
I brought you here today to talk about yesterday's news.
Salad.
So there's an epic salad story that came out in our April issue. It is now May.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happens, where the time goes, but the good news is it's still salad season.
It's just the beginning, really.
It really is, because when April issue comes out, it's actually March.
Yeah, and it's a fake season that we don't care about.
Well,
there's nothing happening in March. Come on.
Not in New York City.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
sorry.
Like
that's
a
where we are.
Sad town here, but California March actually is the beginning of something.
Oh, yeah. You were telling me the other day that, like, tomatoes are happening in the rest of the country right now, and that we should be making tomato content. It blew my mind.
May should be for tomatoes. But spring is for salads. That much I know. And you wrote an epic salad story with many epic salad recipes. Mm. And I think some people might say, Salad. What? How could you possibly do a whole multi-page story on salad? Salad's just salad. But we don't think about it that way. And so my first question to you is, what is a salad?
Let's see. A salad is a opportunity for vibrancy.
Okay.
In a meal.
Great.
It is an opportunity to be the star of a meal.
Sure. The big
or
salad.
Or a supporting actor, actress.
Right. Remember when Elaine, on Seinfeld, she used to always be like, I just want a big salad. Why is that so hard?
It's not so hard. There's the big, what is it called? The dinner salad.
Yeah.
With radicchio and roasted sweet potatoes in this issue.
So what does a salad have to have to qualify as a salad? And don't say carrot ribbons.
No. I mean, it doesn't even need to have lettuce, which is something that we talk about. I think it needs to be at least partially raw.
Okay.
Right?
Sure. I'm asking you, ma'am.
Well, I need a gut check here. There can be cooked elements, and in fact, sometimes it's better if there are, i.e. a roasted sweet potato or a boiled egg, but there definitely has to be a raw element. Doesn't have to be a leaf, doesn't have to be green, could be a raw shaved vegetable.
Right. So a salad doesn't have to be leafy, but it should have something raw. It could include cooked things. And in fact, sometimes that will improve it. It needs to be dressed. And
it needs to get
might
all dressed
be
up.
The star of the show, or it could be a supporting actress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That feels salad-y to me.
So when you look at it that way, there's way beyond like leafy greens.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Even though leafy greens is kind of the way in.
Right.
Right?
So flip to Where's Simplest Greens in this issue?
Well, it's the big, it's the cover girl. I mean, it's obviously. What's it called? The centerfold. And I feel like this story, the idea behind this story, this was one of the presentation of a tower of greens was part of the pitch meeting, I think.
Yeah, it was part of the inspos that we were seeing these beautiful towering salads out at restaurants, and they were often turning out to be the stars of the show, as I mentioned earlier. And why, what is happening in the world right now, and why are we so into salad?
Why are we piling salad up as opposed to just tossing it in a bowl like always?
That's a great question.
Is it more fun to eat that way?
It's more beautiful that way.
Do you think a salad is more delicious when you eat it with your hands?
No.
Oh, God. All right.
What if it's like wet?
Conversation over.
Wet. You want to eat like a wet vinaigrette soaked salad with your hands? Every single bite of it?
Kind of.
I get it when it's like something with a sturdy, crunchy veg. Like I would hand salad the shite out of a Caesar.
Okay.
But I'm not going to hand salad the simple greens with tender herbs.
Oh, I would like to eat that salad with my hands.
Okay.
But that's another story. You do need to use your hands to pile them into this beautiful tower.
And you need to use your hands to dress them.
Okay. So let's just talk about this salad, which happens to be a tower of leafy greens with a delicious dressing and a hand-tossed situation. So if you are going to make just quintessential leafy green salad, what are the rules?
Tender lettuces.
Great.
So nothing too tough and hearty, because you want to be able to really lightly dress them and not have to massage them and overdress them.
Can you give me an example of a tender green?
A bib, a butter, a baby, arugula, a mature arugula.
Would you count like the red leaf and green leaf? Okay,
totally.
They're pretty tender.
Those are tender.
So not iceberg, romaine, heart, cabbages.
Escaroles, none of those.
Radicchio.
No.
No. Endive.
That's not your everyday green salad.
Got it. Okay, so we've got your Boston's, your bibs, your butters, your babies, your frillies, your green leafies, your red leaves.
Yeah, your tender babes.
And this seems to have not only that, but I spy some herbs in this salad.
You do. You don't say.
I do. So what's up with that?
Well, I think that we should be treating our herbs like our tender lettuces. They are tender leaves.
Hmm.
And so why treat them any differently? And they bring a lot of flavor to an otherwise boring mix of tender lettuces.
Okay, so tender herb is also not on the rosemary, sage, thyme, oregano end of the spectrum, but we're talking our fluffy parsley's, cilantro?
Yeah, why not?
Mint.
Yep.
Basil. Dill. Okay, so those can
tarragon. Chive.
Wow, they all get to come to the salad party.
Definitely.
Okay, so you have your tender lettuces, you have your tender leafy herbs, and then talk to me about how you came to the everyday vinaigrette.
So I forget who taught me this many years ago, but I was at some demonstration, a chef demo, and someone was making a vinaigrette, and she pulled out red wine vinegar, white wine vinegar, champagne vinegar, and a lemon.
Wow.
And made a mix of all of them, and then did 2 parts oil to 1 part vinegar with all 4 of those acidic elements together. And it kind of blew my mind.
2 parts oil to 1 part acidic. So that's a
2 to 1.
2 to 1, which is very different from when I was in culinary school. It was 3 to 1.
3 to 1, yeah.
Where it was 3 parts oil, 1 part acid, which was just a much more, you know, just less acidic, heavier, a little bit fattier, richer kind of a dressing. So you leaned into the 2 to 1 ratio.
Yeah, I think almost all the recipes in here will have the 2 to 1 ratio.
And then this mix of vinegars.
Yeah, I just realized that the dressing could be that much more dynamic if you introduced a couple, even 2. There's no rule to it. So now at home when I make dressings, if I have a red and a white wine vinegar at my fingertips, I'll use that. Or I have half of a lemon and then I'll reach for one of my vinegars and put them together, or like a little bit of lemon zest in there as well. Just compiling a couple of different flavors together in the vinegar makes for a much more interesting dressing, I think.
And there's really no rules around that. Like, if I think most people on their kind of their countertop caddy with their oils and their vinegars probably have a couple, like red wine and cider vin, or rice vin and white wine vin.
I would say there are no rules with that.
Wow. So you're just blending is the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So just keep your ratio to two parts oil to one part acid, which could be a mix of these acidic ingredients, the vinegars, the fresh lemon juice. What about lime juice?
Totally.
Lime juice gets to come too.
Yeah. And the other thing that's in this dressing is a little bit of mustard and a little bit of honey.
Okay. And what's the point?
So the mustard, it's a pretty negligible amount, but it helps emulsify the dressing so that it gets nice and thick and creamy and doesn't have that like broken oily vinaigrette feeling on your palate. And then the honey is just there to balance out all of that acidity, since we now have a more acidic leaning vinaigrette. It's kind of nice to have like a little bit of sweetness there to take off the edge.
Okay. And that is starting to make total sense in terms of like a rounded flavor. So instead of just balancing like fat and acid for the whole entire world who has read Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat or heard about it or watched the shows, the other elements in the taste palette, it's not just fat and acid, but having that sweetness,
right,
for balance, instead of just adding more fatty ingredients,
right? So replacing some of the fat.
And then the mustard also has like bitterness, more salt,
a little bit of heat,
more vinegar, more, and yeah, and some heat and some tang. Okay. And then salting and peppering.
Yeah.
And so this is your vinaigrette that now you mix it up, you have it in the fridge all the time.
Yeah.
Really?
I do have a jar of it at home from development. But I mean, I feel like when I was little, my parents used to make like a balsamic vinaigrette that was always like broken on the countertop with maybe like some grated garlic or like some clumpy mustard.
Uh-huh. Like grainy mustard.
Yeah.
So my mom makes her vinaigrette that has been also a staple in my household, also left at room temperature.
Yeah.
And it's been in the same like glass bottle for my entire life. It's basically like she makes it in these big batches.
It still exists.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, it has shallot.
Uh-huh.
It might have a little garlic. And now that I'm thinking about it, when she showed me or like sort of walked me through it, one of those times that I was like, oh, what if I needed to be self-dependent and make my own vinaigrette? Mm-hmm. She combines usually red wine vinegar and a little bit of balsamic, which is just so funny because balsamic's not coming up a lot. Like, 80s are over.
Yeah.
But it makes sense in this blending of vinaigrette scenario.
Wait, does she have a sweetening agent in hers?
I think the balsamic is playing that part. And
I
there's
think you're right.
Definitely mustard and a lot of salt and pepper.
Yeah.
And she makes it in the food processor and kind of just tastes as she goes. But there's something about when you get to the, sort of the bottom of the bottle and it's more shallot-y down there. It's like
a mignonette down there.
It's pretty. Yeah, it really is. Okay. So that is, if you just want to throw together your quick salad. We also talk about salad washing, which I think befuddles a lot of people. And I have to say, I'm very loyal to this brand and I really get behind our content. There is something in our salad washing instructions that I really disagree with.
Oh my God.
Wait. So everything is good as far as like you should have a salad spinner. You fill your salad bowl with the cold water. You put your greens in, but I don't lower my greens in the basket.
Yeah.
She's giving me a look.
You can't run the water over the greens.
I don't. I fill the bowl. Then I put the lettuces into the water.
Where's the basket?
Yeah, it's on the side right now.
You're doing extra work.
No, I'm not, because then I lift from underneath my greens, right? Because your silt and your dirt has gone down to the bottom. So you want to like lift up from the top, not pour out, obviously. But then I lift my greens out and I put them in the basket because I have always felt that if you put the basket in the water and then you put the greens in the basket, when you lift the basket up, you create this like undertow.
Okay.
And it pulls.
Oh my God. And you're crushing your greens.
No, it just pulls the silt into the basket. You've created this like undertow wave as you lift the basket out. And okay.
Well, I've never had that problem, and I've had perfectly clean greens my whole life. Okay. And I do the this way.
Okay, so the way that Bon Appetit says to do it is to fill the salad spinner with the water, put the basket in the water with the greens.
In the basket.
In the basket. Put the greens in the basket, and then swish around.
Swooshy swoosh, yeah, with the hands. Always with the hands.
Always with the hands. And then you're picking up the basket.
Yep.
To drain, then you dump your water out, and then you spin.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we agree a little bit on the middle part.
Yeah. We agree on the necessity for clean greens.
And the necessity of having a salad spinner.
Yeah, oh my God.
Which also...
Life changer.
Did you grow up with a salad spinner?
Yeah, a pretty dysfunctional one, but yes. it was weird. It was like... It had this orange top, and I think it was one of those where you had
pumpers.
To like pump on it, but they were always broken and making like weird... like had the breaking noise. I don't know. I love this
you
salad
like the
spinner.
Okay, so the one that we recommend is the Xylus with the, it's called the Easy Spin Salad Spinner, and it's the one that has the pulley, the like yeah. rope pulley, and that makes the turning. I have the pumper, but it is broken.
Yeah, they always break. And I feel like you get really good leverage with the pulley. It's like starting a lawnmower.
Got it.
Which I also had to do growing up. Wow, this is a real trip down memory lane for me.
Salad is a part of our lives.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like a new, it's not a new thing.
No.
No. There is something new, though, also in this story that I was very obsessed with. And it is part of the dinner salad with radicchio and roasted sweet potatoes, which really is like a main course salad. But the thing, this is the one with the roasted cashew dressing, right?
Yeah.
This dressing makes me crazy. Can you talk to us about this dressing? Because it's...
Why is everyone going bananas for this dressing?
Did you not go bananas for
the
dressing?
I mean, I love. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then talk us through it.
All right. So it's part of our conversation when we were talking about the scope of all of the kinds of salads that are out there in the world that we might want to feature. Was a Caesar, but an alt Caesar. So we're seeing that in a lot of restaurants. There's vegan Caesars. A lot of them are nut-based. And yeah. So that was kind of the inspiration behind it. But I'm kind of a Caesar purist,
okay.
A Caesar purist, if okay. you will. And I didn't want to go the nutritional yeast, like nori, untoasted cashew route.
Okay. That Sorry sounds more hating. Vegan ranchy to me.
Yeah. Well... feel like black pepper, mustard, raw cashew, nut yeast, those are like kind of all the garlic
yeah.
flavors of a vegan Caesar that I've had out in the world, and they're delicious. But I decided that, well, first of all, I don't think that raw cashews are very delicious, so okay. why not toast them first?
Okay, that ties into Toasty Topper, which we will yeah. get to that in a moment. Little foreshadowing, everyone.
Yep. And so... you develop a huge amount of flavor right off the bat by starting with a roasted cashew versus a raw one as your base. So the cashew in this dressing, and this is a spicy-ish dressing, is replacing some of the fat.
Okay, so the cashew is kind of playing the part of
the oil.
Okay, and the cheese?
No, I would say the fish sauce is playing the part of the cheese here.
Well, it's not vegan if it has fish sauce.
Oh, I didn't say it was vegan.
Oh, okay.
I said it was inspired by... all the vegan Caesars we've been seeing out in the world.
Got it.
This is just an alt Caesar.
So you were like, I tip my hat to you vegans with my cashew content.
Yeah.
But I also...
That's not why I'm developing it, though.
No, you forked in the road and you were like, I left the vegans behind when I picked up the bottle of fish sauce.
And then also put boiled eggs on the salad. So like, smell you later. Sorry. I love you guys.
Love you, vegans. Okay. So salted roasted cashews.
Correct.
Okay.
Great. And then rice vinegar. So all of these ingredients are kind of leaning a little bit more Asian. There's fish sauce in it, mm-hmm. garlic, obviously, rice vinegar. And then instead of olive oil, you're emulsifying in vegetable oil. So this happens in a blender and it gets really thick and creamy. But I think the thing that made people go crazy was the fish sauce. It's just that little, like,
yeah.
umami, what
Salty.
The hell is that element
mm-hmm.
that
Very.
You're unexpected. And I think it kind of just takes it to the next level.
Well, I'll speak for myself. There were a couple of things that really did it for me with this dressing, which is really easy. You're just putting all of this into a blender with a little bit of warm water to get everything going, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Cashew oil, rice vinegar, a 3/4 teaspoon of crushed red pepper flakes, which is a not insignificant amount of heat.
That's why we call it spicy cashew dressing.
Correct. And the fish sauce, honey, garlic, salt. So what I loved about it was the balance between the spiciness and the fattiness,
mm-hmm.
which I think you get definitely from the cashew, like sweetness, but also nutty, like that nutty toasty.
Mm-hmm.
But cashews are so sweet,
mm-hmm.
and they're also so fatty.
Mm-hmm.
And then why did you choose vegetable oil instead of olive oil? Like, isn't olive oil just better because it has more flavor?
I didn't want the flavor of the olive oil to overpower all the other beautiful elements that were coming into balance in this dressing. So it felt like kind of it was throwing in a curveball.
Got it. And do you do that neutral. With your Caesar as well? Do you do 100% olive?
I usually do 3/4 neutral and then finish it with a little bit of olive. But I'm like not opposed to a full neutral oil Caesar.
Okay. So if anybody is like weirded out by the sound of the fish sauce, just think about anchovy in a classic
exactly.
Caesar. Which you need that little bit of funky, umami, savory richness.
Yeah, it's not fish forward
this
at all.
This dressing was good enough to have as a dip. So I just want to say that.
Shout out to all the dip lovers.
Shout out to the dip lovers. Or just shout out to our hand salad people who...
Oh, people like you.
People like me who just want to have dressing and crunchy lettuces and combine them together. Let's talk about nut toasting for a second, because this recipe just calls for salted roasted cashews. But there's also a section in the story where we talk about toasting nuts specifically. So what are your rules around that?
So my rules around toasting nuts are I always toss them with a little bit of oil and then season them. That way the salt sticks to them.
Uh-huh.
That's really the only purpose of tossing them with the oil. And then always toasting in the oven, never in a skillet. They toast unevenly in a skillet unless they're as small as like a sesame seed.
Okay.
Which is a seed, not a nut, but still. I don't even toast pine nuts in a skillet.
I think the only time that I toast nuts in a skillet, and it's something I learned from Andy Baragani.
I know what you're going to say.
What?
You're toasting them in fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of oil. Like they're covered.
And so they're cooking evenly.
Correct. Because that's your cooking medium is your hot oil.
Right.
Which when I did that for the first time, it was sort of like very eye opening.
I mean, I love a nut toasted in butter in a saucepan or skillet.
I mean, you're not a monster.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't?
Okay.
But so just your like straight down the middle, like need a roasty toasty nut moment.
Yeah.
You're going in the oven.
Okay. Then the other thing that's interesting about this. So they're coated with a little oil. They're sprinkled with a little bit of salt and they're going into a 325 degree oven.
Which is kind of low.
It sounds low-ish.
Yeah.
I mean, I hardly ever mess around with the 325 unless I'm braising.
Not even for a nut?
Well, maybe now I will.
So because of how high-fat nuts are, they have a tendency to burn. And not that they would burn at 375, but they will cook faster on the outside than they will on the inside and therefore cook unevenly. So 325 is a temperature that allows it to heat all the way through at a consistent temperature and therefore you have a deeply golden brown nut from the inside out.
Right. When you take your nuts out of the oven, don't just look at the surface color.
Break
one in half. Cut your walnut, cut your hazelnut, whatever it is, and it should be brown to the center.
Yeah.
And how many nuts were burned in the making of this story, Molly?
I think I burned more nuts when I was toasting them in butter for the basically tortellini recipe, actually, because that happens so fast.
Got it.
When they're in fat in on the stovetop, they cook in like 3 or 4 minutes. The low temperature gives you a little bit more leeway, so they're not likely to burn from 1 minute to the next.
Got it.
But so that's another safety.
But nuts are expensive, everyone, so set your timers.
Do set your timers. And we did a nice thing for you, and we timed all of the different nuts and how long they take because they do not cook at the same
rate. No, they
rate.
Do. That is quite a range. Walnuts at 9 minutes. Hazelnuts, 17.
And you know how I feel about a well-toasted hazelnut.
How do you feel about it?
I have no love for anything that is less toasted than a dark caramel.
Interesting.
In the hazelnut world.
So a blanched hazelnut, you are just like, get gone. Oh, she pointed to, is that one not toasted enough for you?
I do not think so. You should talk to Morocco about this. This was like one of the first things Morocco and I bonded about was like how much we love a well-toasted hazelnut specifically.
So this is the kind of conversation that people have when they meet each other in the Tuscan. Yeah. It's like, hey, what's your name? Where do you live? Where? How long have you worked here? Talk to me about how toasted you like your hazelnut.
I think it was more along the lines of like, I was walking by his station one day and I caught eye of a little sheet tray of nuts that he had just pulled out of the oven. And I was like, I see you and I see what you did there. And I really respect you for it.
And he knew exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, the nuts. I know, the hazelnuts.
Okay, so that's very helpful. And then it does make me want to ask, because I've been tempted many times standing in front of the nut aisle, what about a nut that you buy? You know, you can buy toasted almonds. You can buy toasted walnuts.
I feel like you can only buy toasted, well, I guess they're called roasted when they're peanuts.
Okay.
They're called roasted when they called, when
really?
You buy them at the store.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh. They're not
roasted almonds. They're not called toasted almonds.
Interesting.
They're called roasted almonds, roasted peanuts, roasted cashews. But you don't see roasted walnuts. I've never seen that.
Okay. So what if you could buy a roasted pistachio?
I think in a pinch, go for it. But I do believe in the freshly toasted nut.
I knew you were going to say that.
Well, that's why you asked.
It's really a softball question. So guys, buy your nuts natural. They're not called raw. Did you know about that?
Oh, jeez.
Because that's a thing. You can't have a raw. It's something about
the way they're processed or something.
Yeah, it's a food safety thing.
Yeah.
So they're not raw. They're usually labeled natural. But if they're labeled natural almonds, they have not been roasted or toasted.
And that's the best case scenario.
But nuts will go bad, so keep them in the fridge.
Or freezer.
If you have room in there.
Yeah.
Next to all your, you know,
stock
venison meat.
If you're Brad.
Okay. The other salad that really got my heart rate going was, I'm not even kidding, I don't go to every tasting anymore, as you know.
We miss you.
And I miss you guys too, but, you know, for my health and well-being, it was a necessary decision. But when it came time for salad development, I was there for that.
Yeah.
And this is one of the ones that we talked about a lot. Little Wedge Salad with Sour Cream Dressing. We talked a lot about the name, but we also talked about what was happening and about Iceberg. Ugh. Controversial.
Oh, my God. The queen of the lettuces.
So that's how I feel about Iceberg. But Iceberg.
You do.
I love Iceberg. Love it so much. But it does get like like this pedestrian, like, well, if you like the flavor of nothing.
Yeah. If you like water.
If you like.
Well, actually, I love water. But I love water so much.
It is water in like a solid form.
It is the mildest of the lettuces as far as flavor goes, but not as far as texture goes.
Nothing beats the crunch.
Nothing.
You
and
can't
especially
even come close.
The cold crunch.
Well, that is what I was getting to.
Okay.
The temperature, you know, this is the thing, like in the old, you know, one of the ways you can tell if a restaurant is worth its muster or whatever is like you order a salad and it should be on a chilled plate.
Uh-huh.
And that really came up when we were talking about this because you were very deliberate about how the temperature of the iceberg itself and the size of these wedges.
Right. So this particular recipe was inspired by the classic wedge salad. And I thought to myself, what are the things that I love most about the wedge? And the bacon and the blue cheese were not them.
Got it.
And the out-of-season tomatoes were certainly not a part of it.
You don't like a pale pink halved
cherry
tomato? Yeah, that's never been. I think on a classic wedge also, I feel that the tomato is
gratuitous.
Completely not. That's another podcast, but why?
Right.
Like, for who?
Maybe in the middle of summer, but also just like have a tomato salad.
Right.
So I distilled the wedge down to its most basic parts and the things that I care about most in the wedge, which are the iceberg.
Yes.
The extremely cold iceberg.
Okay.
And the very creamy, very tangy dressing.
Right. A lot of wedge salads will do like a quarter or a sixth of the head of the iceberg. So yeah. It's like takes a, it's like a big, you know, steak wedge of iceberg going across your plate. These are not that. These are like adorable round bottom pyramids.
Yeah. So as much as I love that presentation at the classic steakhouse, I don't feel like it optimizes the eating experience.
No, it is hard to get maximum dressing coverage.
Precisely.
Like too many layers, too much real estate.
And you're cutting it with a knife and fork and everything's flying all over the place and slip sliding. And it's just like not an ideal situation for
me. No, because the dressing has been applied to the surface and it's just not, it's not getting.
What about all those inner leaves?
Yeah, what about all those inner
leaves? I don't know. They get neglected and then they end up on the plate uneaten.
They're like, just because we were the inside leaves doesn't mean we didn't want dressing. We did.
So we did something about that. I did something about
that. You sure did.
And so this is a salad that is comprised of a bunch of little baby wedges.
So how do you make a baby? So if you're starting from a big wedge, like if you have your head of lettuce,
yeah,
you have your iceberg, you cut it in half, then you put it down on its flat side and you cut it into three wedges from there?
Yeah, you would cut it then like through the root into three equal parts and then each of those either in half or in thirds so that you're making a bunch of little irregular triangle shaped wedges.
Got it. So the round, the base is really what was the outside of the lettuce.
Right.
And then you're sitting it on that little bottom boat.
Little
and
cup.
It goes up into this like beak. Yeah, onto an angle. Adorable. And
very
also
cute.
Utilitarian. It's not just about looks. So we're solving a problem. We're solving a very
an urgent
important
problem.
Yeah, like a national emergency related to dressing coverage.
Yeah.
And inner levels and layers.
It stops now.
Okay, so the dressing, I am a little bit, my eyebrow did, what they went in opposite directions and they went really high when you said you don't care about the blue cheese part.
Yeah.
Not to throw shade on blue cheese, of course, but why?
Well, I'm not a huge fan of blue cheese, but also I feel like the whole point of the wedge salad is the creamy versus the watery crunchy. And that can be achieved through a really tangy, rich dressing.
Okay.
And that alone.
So you don't need any funk. You don't need any sour of the blue cheese. But blue cheese also has a lot of salt.
This dressing has a lot of salt.
Okay, so what's in this dressing?
So sour cream dressing has 3/4 cup of sour cream and a little bit of mayonnaise. It has grated garlic, a little bit of lemon zest, lemon juice, salt, and pepper. So it's really, really simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of inspired by buttermilk dressing, like a buttermilk ranch.
I know, I was going to say, but...
But there's no buttermilk.
There is no buttermilk, but there's lemon juice.
There's lemon juice, and then there's... both sour cream and mayonnaise. So it's richer than a buttermilk dressing. And I originally had started with buttermilk in it and I felt like it wasn't holding up enough. There's so much water in iceberg that a fat like buttermilk, which is already part skim, wasn't holding its own.
Yeah, buttermilk is a, it's got the tanginess going for it and the dairy like fattiness, but it's pretty low. It's actually
lean.
Very low fat. It's like 1.5%.
Right. So I wanted something richer because I know that when you bite into an iceberg wedge, there's a lot of water in there.
And so sour cream is a little bit salty. Mayonnaise, definitely. You've got your garlic for a little bit of tanginess and the lemon zest and the juice and a measured amount of salt.
Yeah.
We're not seasoning to taste. This is like...
Because you're probably not seasoning it enough.
Intentional. And then, okay, so fine. You didn't want to have blue cheese, but then there's... avocados.
Oh, yes. So back to that point of the creamy versus cold and crunchy.
Right.
I felt like in order to drive home that juxtaposition, that an avocado was a nice way to get a different kind of fat in there.
It's kind of like bridging the gap between a fatty, pourable consistency to a solid, crunchy consistency. You have a solid, fatty.
That also gets dressed. Yeah. So it's
right.
A bridge.
Right. It really is. And it's
rivers.
Not bacon.
No.
No. What is the trick to keeping the iceberg very cold? Like, do you cut it and put it back in the fridge?
I would cut it and then plate it immediately.
Got it.
Or if you're doing an advance, cut it into wedges, put it on the platter because this salad gets dressed on the platter, not in a bowl, because you want to maintain the integrity of those little pyramid-y shapes. And if you were to toss it all, it would all come apart.
Got it.
And so it's getting dressed on the platter anyway. So if you're doing this in advance, you could cut them all up, arrange them on a platter, cover them lightly, and chill it until, make your dressing and chill it until you're ready to serve.
I'm having people over for dinner on Saturday. And I feel like this might need to be served.
But there's one more salad.
I know.
And that's the ice water salad. So, and it's another great entertaining option.
Right. Oh, I think that's a good, like, going from very cold to actual ice.
Right.
So how is this original, the story originally, let's just give shout out to Emil Stanek.
Yeah.
Because genius. I believe at some meeting or another, he just said the words ice water salad.
Yeah, give no explanation. It was a pitch meeting and you just said ice water salad.
And everybody was like, approved.
Like, we don't know what it is.
Six people were like, sounds great. Love it. Ice, you'll tell me what it is later.
Yeah.
And then it sort of, you know, the salad story came along and then everybody was like, what about ice water salad? And it ended up here. So what the hell is an ice water salad?
An ice water salad is a salad comprised of thinly shaved vegetables that get stored in a big bowl of freezing cold ice water to help them maintain their crispness.
As opposed to room temperature ice water.
Precisely. I just want to make that distinction.
Freezing cold.
Well, you could have a bowl with like a couple ice cubes in there.
Yeah, no.
This is like, we are going.
It's like
very cold.
A lot of
frigid.
Ice. Just enough water to loosen so the ice can cling around.
Exactly.
And you're shaving the veg. Is this a mandolin situation?
Definitely.
Okay. So in this bowl, I'm looking at the photograph that ran, and it is, you can see ice cubes. And then there's all manner of very colorful. I see some watermelon radish. Are those purple radish or is that...
Mm-hmm.
Purple radishes.
Daikon radish.
Daikon. There's fennel. Bon Appetit's favorite vegetable. Cucumbers? No.
Nope. Those are green radishes.
Got it. It's gorgeous.
So it's any crunchy vegetable. You could use cucumbers. You could use turnips, kohlrabi.
You know that people are putting carrots in this. And you have to be okay with that.
No. You cannot use carrots.
You know, if you're allowed to put a turnip... and a radish. A carrot,
fine.
Texturally, is like right next
this
door.
You know what? This might be the only way I'll eat a carrot.
Carrot coins?
A carrot coin.
Okay.
Except for in matzo ball soup.
Oh, don't get me started. Okay. So you've shaved your veg. And then is the water salted?
No.
Okay.
This is just a technique for storing the vegetables until you're ready to serve them. Mm-hmm. So it's a great dinner party trick because... Mm-hmm. If you were to shave all these vegetables and then just throw them in a bowl in the fridge, sad town.
Definitely.
And so right before you serve this, you pluck off the ice, drain them, spin them in your salad spinner.
Definitely.
And then they get tossed with this really yummy banya cauda-y, garlicky anchovy vinaigrette.
Right. Okay. So the dressing is very, very flavorful because actually in part of the soaking, I think the radishes and stuff would deflame a little bit. So there, any like spicy little bite that they've got might mellow everybody out.
Yeah.
Actually.
Which is okay because all there is radishes and fennel. It's a lot, you know?
And then they also get curly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice for the aesthetics.
Okay, that's very cool. So we have to wrap it up, and I want to just say that I am so committed to getting water off of salad that I know how to be a human salad spinner. Have you ever been in, like, an Airbnb or on the road or just like not in the house that you're normally in and there's no salad spinner?
Yes. And my personal technique is...
I want to know how you do it.
Okay. So I would wash the lettuces in a bowl the same way we would if we had a salad spinner, lift them up, maybe drain them in a colander, and then I would put them in a big dish towel.
Yes.
Wrap it up like in a little log.
Yeah.
close the two ends,
yes,
and whip it around in circles above my head.
Exactly.
Like a lasso.
So I do all of the things the same. If there's a clean kitchen towel, that right. is a good, because it makes, you can make like a hobo pack, you know, like get everything bundled up. But instead of going like around my head, like yeehaw, I just do a windmill with my arm.
Oh, that's good.
So you get really good leverage. You have to go outside though, because it sends like streams water. Of water all yeah. over the place. So I'm glad that we both, it's just all about centrifugal force.
Yeah. In the event that you don't have a salad spinner or don't care to invest in this genius salad spinner that we mentioned earlier, just grab a dish towel.
Just grab a dish towel, hobo it
grease,
up.
And elbow
just
grease.
Like, it also is like just a great like shoulder rotation.
Yeah, switch arms.
Just open it up. I'm hungry for salad now, officially.
Okay, let's go eat some salad.
Great.
Andy, I have lots of herb questions.
Great.
Like, I feel like every time I buy a nice bunch of cilantro, there it is a week later, like half a bunch, all limp, just like sitting in my crisper drawer, staring at me.
I thought you were going to say, whenever I buy a bunch of cilantro, I think of you, but...
No, right. No, it's just like, it's every time I'm like, oh, there's a half cilantro I should have used, but I didn't use. And then I'm thinking like, well, should I have stored it differently? How should I be storing my herbs?
Absolutely.
Why does like, if is basil an herb? I don't even know.
Basil is an herb.
Okay, why does it always turn black when it's in my refrigerator? Like, that bothers me. Like, should I be washing my herbs? Like, which ones do I have to wash? Which ones don't I have to wash? Herbs are supposed to be simple and easy, and you throw them on your whatever, but they're not.
So let's talk about storing and washing herbs. How about that?
Okay, let's start there.
The ones I don't wash are kind of the hard, woodsy herbs. Rosemary, thyme, sage.
Oregano.
Marjoram, your favorite.
Marjoram, yeah.
But when it comes to the tender herbs, the nice tender leaves of parsley, basil, dill, cilantro.
Chervil, for you fancy chervil, French
people. Love. What I do is I'll buy the bunch.
What about tarragon? Is tarragon a tender herb?
Tarragon is a tender herb.
Yeah.
I give it a good trim, maybe depending on how big the bunch is. Like,
wait, what does that mean, a good trim?
A trim on the towards the base.
Of the stems?
Of the stems, okay. Yeah. So like 2 inches. And then from there, I throw the whole bunch in my salad spinner. And then from there, I cover with cold water and just give it, kind of agitate the whole thing, get any kind of dirt. Dill gets really dirty. Basil gets really dirty.
Can I just say, as an editor, I love the
agitate,
verb agitate.
Agitate.
And just kind of shake it
just
around.
Shake it around.
It's like when you're like, you find a little kid and you rub his head, you know? Like, that's what you're doing to the herbs.
I don't have a kid yet, but sure.
Andy's like, that sounds a little creepy, but yeah. If you have a kid, you do that to their hair.
And then once you kind of wash your herbs in your salad spinner, all the kind of grit is going to fall to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then I always do this in a salad spinner so that I could pick the kind of... The basket up, and then all the kind of dirty water will be in the bowl. I'll toss that out and then give it a spin. Then you have these dried, clean herbs.
I guess now that I think about it, a lot of times if you buy flat leaf parsley at your grocery store or something, it's often not sandy. But if you do sometimes get them at farm stands, sometimes if the roots are still attached, especially with basil, get really sandy. Sometimes you got to rinse them twice.
I find dill is usually the one that's always has some sand in it.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
And then, but once it's cleaned, that's when it gets you have these great clean herbs and they're ready to use. But if you're going to store them.
Wait. Are we doing the spin in the...
Yeah, you spin, you dry them. Yeah, I said that.
So they dry?
I don't do the whiz-whiz. I do the pool.
Okay, so you dry them off.
You dry them off, and then what I do is I take paper towel or a kitchen towel that's just kind of has a sprinkling of water, barely.
Spritz.
Not even... Yeah, spritz. Not even that damp.
Yeah.
And then I wrap the towels really gently. I don't pack them in. Fold them in the paper towel or kitchen towel. And I kind of store them this way so that you need a little bit of water to keep them fresh so they don't wilt. But then I also toss this kitchen towel into a resealable plastic bag.
Okay, so...
This is the way my mother did it.
Yeah, no, and I like the resealable plastic bags, and I would also just in the name of frugality, but environmental sensitivity, you can certainly... constantly reuse those bags.
Absolutely.
You know, they just rinse them off, let them dry. Do you do the thing though where you then press all the air out of the bag when you seal it, so it's like vacuum sealed?
I like to do that. I don't press out all the air. I don't know. It's usually because I have so many herbs and it's kind of packs. It's packed into the bag.
Do your herbs mingle? Do you have different herbs in one bag?
It depends on the situation. Like, I grew up eating something. What we always had was a platter of sabzi khordan, which is basically...
So you grew up in a Persian-American household.
I grew up in a Persian household. So you're
like, as we talked about, you're like Dr. Herb here at Bunker.
I was going to say the Prince of Herbs, but sure.
Dr.
Herbs, why not?
I think Prince of Herbs is better.
And sabzi khordan is really just, it's a platter of raw herbs, a mix of different herbs from parsley, cilantro, dill.
Mint?
Mint. You'll sometimes see savory in there. Mm. Not a tender herb. That's a woody, hard herb. But then we just eat it by the handful to go with our meals. Just raw, whole leaves.
Just grab them.
Like a big pile full you would eat throughout
the meal. So give us a typical meal that might accompany in a perfect sense.
So, for example, there's a dish called fesenjun. It's a really rich stew you eat in the fall, winter, and it's made with pomegranate molasses, pomegranate juice sometimes, ground walnuts, usually chicken, but you can make it with beef or lamb, turmeric, and it becomes this like dark, almost sticky, deep, brick color that's like sweet and sour. You eat that with rice, and because like the stew is so heavy, you need something kind of to bring it back to life.
Yeah.
And that's why you always eat a platter of herbs with it, sabzi khordan.
And I think that's one thing we talk about. So we have this big story in our May issue in the Basically section, the back of the magazine, where we sort of teach people how to cook on herbs, particularly as we're discussing the more tender herbs at this time of year you'll find everywhere. I feel like the average sort of typical American home cook is probably more tentative with their herb usage than they should be.
Yeah, I think it's because it's what we've seen so much of in restaurants, I think, almost. Like, you see still, a lot of Russians will do like a sprig of something on top as a garnish.
I hate when they put like one sprig of basil on top of the pasta. What am I supposed to do with that?
Or a mint leaf on a chocolate dessert.
Yeah.
I can't say.
You know what I do love though? I've become a big fan. I'm going to credit my wife, Simone, with this because she's a big herb user. She's a Barragani fan. But incorporating fresh mint into so many savory recipes. Like anything from like, a lot of times I'll make kind of a boiled smashed potato sort of thing with oil, you know, boil the new potatoes and then kind of smash them up a little bit. Just throw a big handful of fresh mint in there with the olive oil and salt.
It brings this freshness to it.
And fragrant,
that aroma that's really unique specifically to mint. I think, I don't know why we're so scared. I do think it's takes time, I think, to use herbs. If you're just using them whole, it's easy, but to chop them, it can be definitely labor intensive.
All right, before we're going to talk about chopping, because that's another very handy thing. Using a lot of herbs, again, especially towards the end of a cooking process, if you have a long stew or reduced sauce or something, hitting it with that big handful of herbs, all of a sudden, just like the dish wakes up.
Yeah, it wakes up. What I actually like to do, I think a lot also, for example, like take a pasta dish. You'll see a lot of pasta dishes in restaurants where the herbs are on top. Mm-hmm. But I will never do that. I always add my herbs and fold it in. Bit of heat.
All right, so that's interesting. So the other day, Molly Boz and I were doing this recipe video for my pork marbella recipe, which everyone's talking about. anyways, so we had this the pan sauce after the pork tenderloins were cooked, and we were slicing the pork and we were plating it, and we were going to sort of drizzle the sauce on top of the pork, and then I was like, oh, let's hit it with some fresh flat leaf parsley after that. And she's like, no, you want to fold it into the pan sauce while it's still in the pan. So then it does incorporate a little bit, but it's still at the last minute.
Yes, it's so that it becomes one with the dish
and
not so separate and just as a garnish. That's what I like to do, whether it's a stew, braise, or a pasta dish.
One thing I certainly don't do as a home cook, but I do think you see at restaurants, especially more Can we come up with a new term for farm to table? But I don't know. But you know what I mean.
I know exactly.
Those sort of restaurants that do a really good job of using herbs in salads as if they were lettuce leaves. Like you might have one type of lettuce, but you can also tons of flat leaf parsley and mint and chervil and dill just tossed in there in equal proportion with the lettuce.
I think it's something, it just gives it more just complexity. Like take it, let's say like a wedge. Just, I think we have from April 2018, the kind of the new wedge we did.
Yep.
And rather than like a lot of bacon, we topped it with a bunch of different types of tender herbs.
Yeah.
And that goes really well.
I mean, as much as I love like a good butter lettuce or, you know, what's the one everyone loves these days? Little gem. But it can get a little redundant.
Yeah, they're leafy, they're tender, but flavor-wise, it's like it's a little flat.
Okay, so we want to use more herbs in your salads. That's a great way to, especially if you have them in your fridge. Like, yes. And that's my problem. I don't think about that. Then they go bad or they just wilt. But it's like, yeah, if you're making a salad, throw some herbs in there. In any sauce, incorporate it in the sauce instead of throwing it on top of the dish at the very end.
I would just tear them. You don't even need to really.
Okay. Tear, chop, mince. There's lots of different ways to approach an herb.
Yes, except for chiffonade. We don't use that anymore.
Oh, I like to do a chiffonade sometimes.
Really? Well, still?
Sometimes I'll take, if I'm doing, I'm going to tell you when I do a chiffonade. So, and it is a ridiculous word. It's like if it's summertime and I'm doing some sort of like caprese salad and I've got the fresh mozzarella torn up and whether it's tomatoes or figs or peaches, I just like to get the basil, roll a bunch of leaves up like a little cigar, and then slice across on the bias. So you get these little like ribbons. And then I'll sort of sprinkle that over the salad. Because, I mean, I know that the torn is more kind of cool and rustic and devil may care. But there's something I like this.
Very satisfying.
The ribbons, it's very satisfying. You slice it against, and then all of a sudden it rolls out and you have this confetti of basil. But it also, I like the fact that you have these thin ribbons that equally disperse over like your caprese salad in a way that sort of like, it's not just in bunches here or there.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's very cooking school, like
that
sort of
is
1983.
It's old school, definitely 1983. Something I don't use that cut anymore. But I will use the leaves whole. And when I say whole, that means like a bit of leaf, a leaf with a bit of a tender stem.
So like a flat leaf parsley.
You'll
pick off the leaves, but maybe a suggestion of stem there.
Exactly, and I'll throw it into a salad, or I'll make my own little herb salad on its own.
Well, that was another thing. That was like, sorry, we really have so many more thoughts about herbs than I even knew. But I remember it was such a revelation when Fergus Henderson opened St. John Restaurant in London years ago and the St. John Cookbook came out, which was the sort of transformative cookbook.
The bone marrow,
but he would serve it with the parsley salad.
Exactly.
And it was just parsley, like red wine vinegar or something.
Maybe shallots.
Yeah, maybe some shallots.
Yeah, salt.
And salt. And it was like this revelation of like, wait, I'm just eating parsley, but it was such the perfect complement to that rich, fatty, unctuous bone marrow and vinegary and bright and acidic. You're just like, wait, that's all you have to do sometimes?
Yeah. Parsley is still, I think, underrated.
100%.
I really love parsley. It is the all-purpose herb, I feel like.
Yeah.
It always is there for me whenever I need it.
So sometimes you'll use a whole one.
Sometimes I'll use a whole one.
I've seen you at your cutting board, Andy, like with surgical precision going at herbs. Let's talk about the micro mints.
The micro mints. I'm for that. So I'll do micro mints, sometimes just herb powder. I'll go from whole to a tear to
a rough chop
sometimes. A rough chop.
Like what's a rough chop compared to whole?
Rough chop is probably around maybe half an inch.
And what
size will
you do that for sometimes? Just to throw in a...
I'll throw that in, let's say if I'm doing a tabbouleh salad, something like that.
Okay, yeah. So an herb salad. A grain salad or something.
Salad,
exactly. Yeah, you don't want it super fine.
Exactly. And then with the really fine stuff, I use for all my salsa verdes and all the variations.
Okay.
I think the herb should be really finely minced just so you... you want them to kind of extract their oils and. Mm.
So you actually want to you do want to release everything that's in.
Oh yeah, I think like for salsa verde, it's totally okay to go over your herbs and bruise your herbs.
Okay, can we talk salsa verde versus chimichurri versus? I feel like these are pretty loose terms, and everyone has their own interpretation of
these are
kind
just
of what they mean.
Green sauces.
Yeah. So and what is like, so what is the Andy Barragani salsa verde?
So I would say I have like a base recipe. Which always consists of parsley. That tends to be the kind of the herb that doesn't go away. There might be another herb in the form of cilantro. This is like a supporting player. Cilantro, maybe tarragon, maybe chives. And I'll have like this finely chopped, or excuse me, like herb powder of sorts. Some kind of allium. So that could be shallots. That could be green garlic. That could be regular garlic. That could be a red onion. And then some kind of acid, either in the form of vinegar or citrus. So really, herb, an allium, citrus, and then fat in the form of olive oil. Almost, I'll say, so, I'll take that back, almost always olive oil. Sometimes I'll use a neutral oil, depending on what kind of sauce. So if it's, let's say I'm doing a sauce that's supposed to go with a dish that's more Mediterranean, I'll do olive oil. But for example, in an upcoming issue, I have a, in our next issue, in our grilling issue, I have a salt and pepper grilled black bass, and I have a curry salsa verde. So I used a neutral oil for that because the curry goes better with a neutral oil rather than olive oil.
Gotcha. One thing I know I sometimes struggle with is how do we incorporate all those ingredients together to form a sauce?
So I think a lot of people add too much fat to their herb sauces. Yep. I think the trick is to kind of start with your, add your vinegar first.
So you'll micro-mince all your herbs.
I'll micro-mince all my herbs.
Chef's knife on a cutting board.
And then that's set aside. And then I'll macerate the alliums, whether it's shallot or garlic, in a bit of acid.
Mm-hmm. And that just sort of takes the sting out?
That just takes the sting out. Sometimes I've been known to kind of rinse the onion or shallot with a bit of cold water.
Deflame it.
Deflame it. And then I'll add the oil to the herbs. So I have like kind of an herb oil going on. And you could do those two things ahead of time. You have your like vinegary allium situation and then your oily herb situation. And then when you want to serve it, I combine them and let them sit 15 minutes. I don't make the herb sauce too early on because then the alliums are going to overpower the sauce and it's going to discolor the herbs. But you could do those two things ahead of time.
What about salt? When does salt come into play?
Salt, I salt the vinegar and allium mixture right there. And then when it all comes together, I'll season it again, taste adjust.
Do you ever use chilies?
I use chilies. That's the thing. There's so many. That's the base recipe. So from there.
So if you want a little bit of heat.
You want a little bit of heat.
Throw in a little minced chili.
Minced chili or dried chili.
Where Simone and I always have our little kitchen disagreements. Mm-hmm. She always wants to add anchovies.
I think a bit of anchovies is great depending on, again, what's the purpose. Like if it's a grilled piece of meat, I want an anchovy or two.
To have a little more backbone?
Oh, yeah. I think like. Anchovy does something magic with like red meat, like lamb and beef. Mm. It's so delicious. I love my fresh chilies just as much as I like my dried chilies. Sometimes you want a bit of mustard as like another form of heat and acid, whether that's Dijon or you could get texture through whole grain.
Now, will you, because I know you're pretty particular about your herbage, will you make a batch of this and store half of it in the fridge, or are you the type that always has to have it made fresh?
No,
for that
meal? I'm that asshole who's making it right then and there. And
could I store half of it in the fridge and use it 2 days later?
I think, yeah, definitely. I think you can make it ahead of time and use it a day later, maybe 2 days later. Sometimes it just gets too garlicky.
Yeah.
So that's a problem with it, but. I love salsa verdes. That sauce, it's never going to go away.
One last thing. Years ago, I was somewhere, and a chef, who wish I could remember, this is such an elemental thing, which I just never thought of. They were using cilantro in one dish, and then took all the stems and just did a little fine little mince of those and like sprinkled it over a dish. And you have these little crunchy pops. Of cilantro flavor with bite without it being cilantro leaves.
So I really saw that for the first time at Estella in New York. Ignacio does that. He'll do that with the lamb ribs. Mm. He'll have like this green juice on the bottom of the plate, or sometimes it's a green juice, sometimes it's actually like a salsa verde where it has more texture. But he'll take the cilantro stems and really finely chop it. And the stems are actually have a more concentrated cilantro flavor than the actual leaf.
Yeah.
And he'll sprinkle that underneath.
And you can do those other herbs, but a lot of it just depends on how sturdy or fine the stems are. And if they're too sturdy, then it doesn't quite
work. I like to do it with cilantro, and I like to do it with parsley. Mint can get a little bit bitter. Basil, it's fine. You just never really have enough stem to kind of go about it that way.
Andy Baragani, what are we calling you? Not the Prince of Herbs. Prince of Herbs?
Prince of Herbs, sure. Why not?
Prince of Herbs.
I don't want to be a kid.
You'll get there one day. Thank you for joining us. And you can find our article, our primer on herbs in the May issue of Bon Appetit on Stands Now. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks, Adam.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che, and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.